Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Welcome to the first episode of the Guns and Weed podcast with Michael Dean and Nima Vedati. I am Michael Dean.
I'm Nima Vedati. How's it going, y'all?
Yeah, we're doing what's called it's one of them podcasts that's across the miles. I'm in Wyoming, in Casper, Wyoming. Where are you, Nima?
I'm in Washington State, here in Pasco, Tri-Cities. It's in the southeastern corner of the state.
Yeah, one of the things we're going to talk about is comparing Wyoming to Washington in freedom, since you've experienced both of them.
I have, indeed, yes.
Yes.
Many, many differences.
Yes. We're doing a, what's called a double lender podcast. Double lender is a term from your industry, broadcasting, which, you know, like when you watch CNN or Fox or whatever, and there's people in different places, and they're doing green screen together, and it looks like they're in the same room. Daily Show, they all do it. That's double lender with video, and we're just doing that with audio. Basically, Nima's recording on his computer. I'm recording on a little H2 Zoom, H2 recording device that's on a mic stand. It kind of looks like a popsicle stick, or like a, you know, like an iced cream on a stick that records.
Iced cream?
Yes.
Is that what you said?
That's what Mr. Byrne says. Smithers, iced cream. Smithers, get me an iced cream.
Bread.
Turn on the televisionola. Yeah, and then we're talking over other computers that aren't recording, just chatting on Skype. So,
word, yeah, yeah.
That's the.
So we have at least four computers in our service. Is that right, Michael?
Yeah, I like computers. They're kind of like an interesting mix of science and voodoo.
It's the wave of the future, baby.
And they help you. It was the wave of the future like 40 years ago. But I love that. I love when people jump on the internet wagon. Not saying you did, just that phrase. You're making fun of that. But, you know, new internet startup companies that are clueless and say, like, the future is now. Get a web page.
Well, because you'd be surprised, there's still people out there who have not adopted using the internet and computers as much as other people.
I did a website in 1996, and I got on the internet in 93 using a protocol called Gopher, for all you old nerds out there. Yeah, I remember there was an ad for a web design company in San Francisco in like 1997, and it had a picture of like a farmer in overalls standing in front of his pigs, and it says, he has a website, do you?
I think I actually remember that ad. Yeah,
Earthlink.
How amazing is it, though? I mean, it should amaze us. It should never cease to amaze us that right now we're talking and we're hundreds of miles away, and hopefully hundreds of people will hear this podcast. And it just, there's no need for us to all be local anymore.
I know.
We can do this globally, nationally.
Well, I wanted this when I was a kid. Like, I've always often told the story how when I was a kid, I built a little FM transmitter into a telephone headset and used to walk around talking into it, and like, I don't know if anyone ever listened. It only broadcasts like 100 yards, but, you know, the thought that someone could listen meant something to me. And I used to, like, you know, in the back of magazines, they used to have, in the 70s, they used to have, like, pen pals, you know, and you'd write to people. I would write to strangers when I was a kid. I always wanted to touch the world in special places. And now I'm doing it for liberty. I've done it a lot for other stuff, but not for non-liberty, but, you know, just for my own stuff, but, you know.
You want to touch the liberty?
Rock and
roll.
You want
the liberty to touch?
I want to caress the liberty and make it wet.
You want to caress the liberty?
Make
there you
it
go.
Wet. I'm wet for liberty.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So.
I'm surprised we went there that early.
I know. So we made this movie together called Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, while you were living here in Casper, and it was a whirlwind tour. We made it in like 4.5 months, working like, you know, 70,000 hours a week or something. And it's been out there for a while now, and people are really digging it. It's on YouTube. There's a link on this podcast site. and people can go look at it for free and then, you know, buy the DVD if they want to spend a whole lot of money, or wait a year and then buy it for a normal amount.
Yeah, so, it was definitely a blast making the movie. And
talk about that a little bit.
I'd always wanted to do that. I've been a news reporter for a while, and when I was a news reporter, you know, I always feel like there's just so much I'd like to really be able to say and talk about. Get out there. I mean, that's the whole point anybody goes into the media anyways, because they feel like they want to bring some sort of truth to the masses. With Guns and Weed, obviously, we're not really reaching the masses, but I think the future, and especially like we were talking about with the internet, is the niche. We can get that and let people know that there's freedom there. And we can do that because we can be on the internet and people can see it. In fact, you can go to YouTube right now. You don't have to pay the money, or pay the money and wait, whatever you want. But either way, you can watch the movie, and it's really about the message. And it was just such an amazing thing to be able to do that.
Yeah, there's kind of an explosion on the internet right now of freedom and liberty stuff. Ours is really good, though. Ours is the only freedom movie I've seen that has humor, for one thing. It's all good. I mean, I've just seen a lot more, like, people who don't buy the left or the right and just think it's all crap and realize that it's all a rigged game and just want to, like, step out of the oncoming truck. And it used to be that, like, the only people that talked like that were, like, heavily armed people that lived in a bunker, and now it's like college students that don't even own guns.
Anybody can talk about it now, yeah. I mean, and everybody does. It comes up in daily conversation that at least something's wrong. I think everybody on every level recognizes that things are getting worse.
How far away is your nearest gun from you right now?
It's a couple arm's lengths away. I guess that's probably not the best answer.
I got one on me. It's like
yours is always in your pocket.
I like what Ted Nugent says. The right to keep and bear arms, that means I've got some on me now. You know, not just one, some.
Yeah.
So what do guns mean to you, and how you didn't have guns when I met you. You were very knowledgeable about libertarianism and voluntarism, yeah, and anarchy and...
Well, you taught me how to shoot, and I definitely thank you for that.
Yep. I didn't just teach you to shoot. I taught you the importance of carrying a gun. Now tell me the importance of carrying a gun.
Well, the importance of carrying a gun is taking that responsibility into your own hand. I mean, it's ridiculous to be a libertarian and not realize that part of that is being self-contained. Not self-contained in the sense that you don't need other people's help, but self-contained in when you're not going to rely on other people. You can take care of yourself. You don't have to place your life into others' hands. And when I'm talking about those others, I'm talking about, you know, most people just think the cops will handle everything. But in reality, you know, the cops are mostly there to enforce laws, not necessarily to protect you. And they spend most of their time enforcing laws. So who does that leave to protect you?
And what do you mean? What do you mean by laws? Explain that to people that don't understand the difference.
Laws. Okay, well, there's a big difference between like property laws or laws against property crimes, crimes against your person. It's kind of like what we call the non-aggression principle. If somebody steals something from you or if somebody attacks you, they've aggressed against you. So cops don't seem to spend a lot of time doing that unless it's after the fact and they're going after people.
If you're in a life-threatening situation, the cops will come. They'll come afterwards and take pictures of it.
Take pictures and take notes and write a report. And maybe, yeah, a month later, 2-3 months later, they'll prosecute some guy and spend your tax money putting him in jail and feeding him for years and years and years.
What we're talking about here is the difference between good laws and bad laws.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what's a good law and what's a bad law?
There's only one good law, as they say in our movie, as Mama Liberty says. And, you know, we can go ahead and reiterate on it. You know, it's not biting. It's paying homage, because that's the truth. The only law is don't aggress against anybody else. And, you know, in return, you expect that of everybody else. So basically, don't hurt somebody, don't aggress on them unless they're aggressing against you. In that case, it's self-defense, and you're really preventing a crime from happening because you're preventing an aggression from taking place. Skypes. Bad laws is pretty much anything else. Them telling you how to live your life. Them telling you can only do it in certain ways, or else we'll come and make you follow our laws with our guns.
Yeah, and there's a lot of... there's a lot of media lately that I've been digging, like Cop Block is a site that basically try to videotape bad cops in action and put it on the internet. Because a lot of times those people operate in the shadows, and if you can pull them out of the shadows, they're a little more they have to be a little more responsible for what they do.
Yeah, but Will Grigg is also really amazing. If you ever read Will Grigg, he's from Idaho. He's a writer. You often see him on LRC, and he does this. Pro Libertates, I think, is the name of the podcast.
Sounds French.
Or the website. He's a real cool cat, though, and he's a great writer, and basically he's kind of like Cop Block. You know, he's every time there's an injustice, which is so often, I mean, you see these stories two or three times a week when cops getting away with something horrendous, killing somebody or doing something that leads to somebody's death, and, you know, the most they ever get is a little bit of paid vacation.
One problem I have with a lot of those sites is they don't seem to differentiate between good cops and bad cops, and that's something I'd like to bring up. I mean, in a real purist, agorist sense, there should be no cops. Everyone should take care of themselves or hire private cops or whatever. But,
well, private cops would still be cops.
Yeah. But
I mean, I think the cops could exist. They just wouldn't be government monopoly cops.
Well, yeah, and it would be like you'd be riding on a private road and, you know, if you're driving drunk and weaving and they pulled you over, you know, instead of throwing you in the jail, they'd take you home and, you know, your insurance might go up. And your wife would probably yell at you instead of going to jail. You know, it'd be dealt with in a smaller way that would be probably just as effective or more. But
right.
Here's what I come down to a lot is the difference between theorism and reality. You know, a lot of libertarians, I think, or some libertarians, I think, operate in a theorist bubble. And I'm not calling out Cop Block or anyone like that. I'm more, but just in general, some people don't recognize the fact that there are cops and there is a system, and just by saying you're initiating aggression when a cop pulls you over doesn't mean it's going to make it go well for you because he doesn't live in the same bubble you do. So given that fact, I think painting all cops with a broad bad brush is not productive because I think that good cops should be recognized too as well as bad cops. And if you recognize the good cops, it sets up the true and real us against them between the good cops and the bad cops. And the good cops can help keep the bad cops in line, maybe.
I mean, that's very true. I mean, you know, you do have your Oath Keepers out there. And I'm sure you do have your peace officers out there, especially in smaller towns, you know, where people might not be as corrupt or where there's not as many cops to where corruption can hide easier.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's definitely people out there who have good intentions.
Although the DHS now is giving seminars to local cops, trying to teach them to recognize possible terrorists. And their list of, like, things that look like possible terrorism, I mean, it describes everybody in Wyoming.
Because they all carry guns without permits?
Well, it's, you know, the list is, like, carries gun without a permit, carries gun with a permit, is strongly Christian, or is anti-abortion, or is, you know, speaks
anti-Federal Reserve is one they throw in there now. Yep.
You know, votes for Ron Paul. The thing about lists is when everyone's on them, it's when not everyone, a useful list. Yeah. It's no longer a useful list. So maybe they'll just put everyone on it.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's the problem. And hopefully we can get it to where everybody should deserve to be on their list, list of people who don't buy everything that they are fed and eat it up.
Part of what's rambling around in my tired old mind lately that gives me a bit of consternation is the idea that the way things are going, it might be possible that no matter what you do, no matter what a good person you are, you're going to end up running afoul of this. And you're younger and more optimistic than I am. So I always like to have you try to cheer me up a bit on that. And maybe our listeners would like that too.
To let you know that what exactly has got you down? I mean, it is kind of a downer. You mean inject a little optimism into the bleakness that we see before us, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, well, basically, I started paying attention to politics shortly before, about 2 months before Obama announced.
And it's when you started paying attention to politics?
Yeah, or maybe longer than that, because I bought my first gun 3 years ago. And, you know, I'd shot guns with my dad as a kid, but I'd never really owned guns as an adult until about 3 years ago. Someone tried to break into our house, so we got a gun. And then we got more guns, and then we realized that living in California, even being the good, law-abiding, honest people we were in danger of going to jail owning these guns for peaceful purposes. And so we moved to Wyoming, which is a lot more free gun-wise, but a lot less free in a lot of other ways. You know, it's, I, and I, for a while I was kind of like, oh, the Republicans will save us from this from these Democrats who are oppressing on our rights.
There's your mistake. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I even registered Republican for a while. I'm still registered Republican. I don't know how to unregister. I know you can get on and switch to another party or to independent, but I don't know if you can go down and just say, I'm no longer a voter. Take me off this list.
Well, that would probably get you on the Homeland Security list.
I know. It's like you gotta fight for one team or the other. I mean, I'm very interested in politics. I follow them a lot. I just don't believe that it's a good idea anymore.
Pro wrestling. That's all it is. It's pseudo intellectual pro wrestling.
It's like a football game where both teams suck.
Yes, and there's only two teams.
I know.
None of the other teams count. They're not in the league.
And they're both sucking more and more and more.
Yes,
and
it's like, they get worse.
Obama lately is acting like George Bush at his worst.
Yeah, yeah, and people see it. I mean, I think Jon Stewart's been really great uncovering the Obama-Libya thing. He's definitely nailed it more than anybody else so far.
I like that he can put aside his Obama humping when things get really bad and go, you know, this is messed up.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I guess I just, I was pretty blind to politics for 40-some years and then got very interested in them because suddenly it mattered to me. Mm-hmm. And then the more I got into it, the more I went, this is just an untenable, unwinnable, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, no matter which way you go in it.
You know? Right, right. You and can then, see the dead end. Yeah, it's and, one long dead end throughout history.
And you know, I would probably vote for Ron Paul if he – I'll probably vote for him anyway. I'll probably go down there and write his name in. But I don't think that's going to solve anything. I don't think he's going to win.
Yeah.
And, you know, half our listeners just friggin' unsubscribed.
We're trying to. I was wondering, because there's been talk of Rand running, too. I mean, what if you saw because one of the criticisms, you know, anti-Ron Paul people make is his age. What if it was him and his son as vice president?
I like Rand. Rand's pretty much a clone of Ron. And he's a tiny bit more of a hawk, which actually can get some more Republicans on board. But, you know, really, I think unless the GOP runs one of these guys, they're not going to win. I don't think they're going to win with a write-in, and I think that writing a man is just going to give Obama four more years. But
yeah,
I mean, I'm sounding like I care about politics again, but it's really, it's just like what I'm trying to get to and then ask you for the experience, strength, and hope with is, I mean, when I pay attention to the news, and I'm a news hound, really. You know, I watch like an hour of Fox, an hour of CNN, an hour of MSNBC, and then I'll go listen to, you know, like Jack Blood for an hour or Free Talk Live for an hour. And whole soup in my head is it's largely what's wrong with the world. And what's wrong with the world gets me down. And really, the funny thing is my life is freer than it's ever been. I have more money than I've ever had. You know, I'm worried less about, like, can I pay the bills than I ever have. Things have gotten way better for me personally in the past few years. I just kind of worry that, even though I'm a good person, I'm going to get thrown in jail for speaking my mind, or they'll find something else to do it with, which is why we have the disclaimer at the end of this thing, the don't drone me thing from the movie. You know, I worry that no matter what I do, either I'm going to end up in prison, even though I don't break the law, or my money...
Well, even though you haven't done anything wrong. See, there's that line again between breaking the law and doing something wrong.
Well, no, because right now I do not break any laws, even the stupid ones. I don't break any laws, but the laws can change. You know, like recently the ATF made it illegal to own a certain kind of shotgun. I don't have that kind of shotgun, but I almost bought that kind of shotgun. Yeah, the ones that just have a pistol grip instead of a butt at the back of them.
You can't buy those anymore, huh?
No, you can't own them. They suddenly classified them the same as machine guns.
Like, when did that happen?
You need a permit for it? Oh, a little while ago. It was just a little experiment they tried to see if they could make a bunch of people into criminals. So I don't break any laws right now. I've made it a really big point to not break any laws because I've been aware of laws for the first time. Either the laws can change and I'm going to be a criminal, or someone out there is going to hate what we're saying on this podcast or in the movie or whatever and find, you know, plant a bunch of coke on me or something, or plant a machine gun on me and arrest me for that. Or even if none of that happens and I just get to speak my mind and do what I want and we're, you know, then the economy is going to collapse to the point where I can't afford my house payments or something, even though I'm kicking ass right now with money, you know?
Yeah.
So make me feel better.
Well,
my
first,
friend.
You have to realize we do live in an unfree world. It's a completely unfree world. The idea is you got to live free yourself, and part of that is not being worried about all that, not letting the fear control you. I mean, maybe you shouldn't watch so many hours of Fox News and CNN.
So maybe people should just unsubscribe from our podcast right now?
No, not necessarily. I mean, we're not trying to scare people. That's not our idea. But, I mean, when it comes to pretty much state-run or state-in-bed-with media, the idea is to always have your attention, always be scaring you with something.
But those independent podcasts that I listen to, like Free Talk Live and Jack Blood, they are not.
They scare you too, right?
They scare me too. They scare me more.
They scare you more.
Yeah, I mean, Fox News right now should make people feel good because they're like, hey, Obama's finally doing something right. He's bombing people. Woohoo! And Jack Blood's like, this is horrible. This is immoral and illegal. And I'm like,
yeah.
I knew that.
I just realized that, like you said, the situation is untenable. Ron Paul says it. People say it all the time that eventually something has to give as far as this empire thing goes and the Libya thing goes. I mean, they're going to run out of money at some point. I would hope, I would imagine. It seems like the laws of economics would demand it. That's sort of what gives me comfort. The other thing is, I mean, you can't let them get to you. You have to sort of opt out of the state. I mean, don't let it be your problem. Don't let it be, we are bombing Libya. No, they are bombing Libya. Obama in Washington, D.C. is doing it. Just wash your hands of it. Don't think about it, because you got to think about how wrong it is. But don't take ownership of it. You can unplug from the system as much as you can mentally, sort of withdrawing your consent. And if everybody did that, that's all it would take.
Yeah, but only about like 1% to 3% of the people do that.
Okay, so that's the mission. I mean, and that's why do a podcast? Why do anything? And a lot of people are doing it now, but that's the idea. Is because I think Stefan Molyneux recently was talking about this, and somebody else has written about it, Karen Kwiatkowski, I think. The idea that, you know, we talk about these state structures, this big government, this top-down thing controlling us, but really where they are most successful, the genius of how they can get away with it is because everybody enforces it on the horizontal level, the masses, everybody buys into it. When we talk about the kind of stuff you and me are talking about right now in this podcast, people immediately either tune out and say they're crazy, or, you know, they listen, but they've already been awoken. But it's that vast majority of people who think, they just, you know, shudder when you talk about how policemen writing tickets to people is bad.
And a lot of it's not enforced by the state. A lot of it's enforced by people. You
by
know?
People, like, exactly.
If someone goes to prison for not paying their taxes, the average guy is like, good.
Yes, you know? Exactly.
And,
that's what we have to change.
If you try to say, you shouldn't have to pay traffic tickets, you should challenge them in court, most people are like, you're insane. I just pay them. You know, I don't want that trouble.
Or if you're broke and you have to decide between eating for a month or paying your $500 fine because it went to warrant, people just say, oh, well, you know, why don't you just pay it right now? You know, it's going to get worse.
Is that a theoretical thing you're talking about there, Nima?
I'm saying, I mean, I know a lot of people who have spent a lot of money on traffic tickets in Texas. Texas is really bad.
I know.
I bet California is really bad about it. But
people who think Texas is a free state are insane. It's like California with weed.
It is. It's California with rednecks.
California with more rednecks. Yeah, sir.
I tweeted. I love saying that. That's a great verb, I think. I tweeted. That's one of my favorite new verbs that has come into existence.
My wife kind of hates the internet. She loves that I'm really socially active on it and spreading my thoughts and stuff. But she can't see the use of it for herself. She calls tweeting twatting.
Twatting.
I'm not on Twitter. I don't really care what people had for lunch.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like any other technology, it can be used for useless stuff or useful stuff. And as long as somebody thinks what they're doing is useful, then it's worth it.
I've done a lot of pruning of people on social networks, which some people think is kind of mean, but people do it to me too. I've noticed like several people unsubscribed me because I sent out a thing for this Guns and Weed thing.
And they're part of that state's horizontal enforcement network.
Yeah.
You say naughty bad things, I must defriend you.
Yeah. Someone recently wrote me and she said, it was someone in Wyoming who's like a rodeo star lady, and she said, why did you add me as a friend? Some of the things you say make me want to throw up, literally. And I didn't even answer her. I just unfriended her and blocked her so she wouldn't have to see my stuff. But, you know, it was like Facebook told me to add her because we both liked some politician at some point in Wyoming.
Right, right.
That guy that ran for governor.
Which one? Ron Michalai, probably,
yes,
right?
Ron Michalai. Yeah, which, like, the more I think about it, like, that guy would have imposed Christian Sharia.
Christian Sharia.
Talk about
I love
Christian
it.
Sharia.
Yeah, I think we need to explain to people Christian Sharia.
I think I came up with that line, or we did, or did, something. But
we, I think we did it together. Yeah. You can have it if you want.
No, you can have it. I don't want it. It gets me in trouble.
Basically, I mean, a lot of people get upset about this so-called Muslim Sharia law, and yeah, I don't think anybody should be forced to submit to a system of law that they don't agree with. But you know, that's what you do basically when you follow American law, at least government law. Point is that a lot of these people who are supposedly smaller government want to impose morality rules like it was, you know, a Sharia law in an Islamic country. Like, don't drink at certain times.
Yeah. Or don't gamble or don't use prostitutes or, you know. I mean, I do not gamble. I do not go to prostitutes. I've never paid for sex in my life. I don't have any moral problem with it. But there have been times where, like, I had a pocket full of money and I hadn't been laid in, like, 6 months. And I lived in a neighborhood that was full of prostitutes. I still didn't go to one just because, sure. You know, first of all, half the time, you know, in that neighborhood in San Francisco, you probably don't get laid. You probably get her boyfriend comes around the corner with a brick and hits you in the head.
Right, steals your kidney.
Yeah, steals your kidney. But which is because it's illegal. If it wasn't, that wouldn't be the case.
Right.
You know, that doesn't happen in Vegas. And, yeah. You know, the Democrats...
Well, it does happen in Vegas because it is illegal
it doesn't
in
happen
Vegas.
At, like, the Bunny Ranch out in...
In fact, yeah, the Bunny Ranch owner was saying that on Stossel,
yeah,
that in Vegas,
yeah.
People are full of AIDS, yeah. And there's,
you know,
crime, there's robberies.
Harry Reid is really finally showing his true colors in a way that I'm surprised the Democrats still like him, because he's coming out and saying prostitution should be outlawed in Nevada.
I know,
and it's like,
isn't
really?
It? It's insane.
You know, like, talk about pissing on your audience, you know?
Well, I mean, is he gaining traction with it? I mean, I know he's come out and said it, but
I don't know.
I've seen a fair. I mean, of course, I read things from a different side of the tracks, I guess, if you'd even call it that. But I mean, it seems like everybody I've heard talking about it has just been like, "Oh, this is completely ridiculous." But
yeah, and Dianne Feinstein was against medical marijuana being legal.
I know. It's just insane. I mean, again, those aren't sort of Christian Sharia people
no,
you tend to think about.
No, they're secular humanist Sharia. And, right. You know, for a long
exactly.
time, I thought of the Democrats as the good guys and the Republicans as the bad guys, because the Democrats wouldn't throw you in a cage for as long for, you know, sex and drugs.
It's the same thing, though. That's a good point. There is that secular humanist Sharia as well.
Yeah.
I mean, in both cases, it's them trying to enforce their morals on other people who maybe they don't want to follow that set of system or that set of morals. Maybe it's not their prerogative to do that.
Talk about the problem with democracy, the 51-49 thing. And, you know, most people listening to this probably know this already, but there might be some newcomers to this that just stumbled across it on the internet, or someone who, you know, liked my filmmaking book and looked at what I'm doing now and is horrified like a lot of them are. But, you know, talk about the 51-49 thing.
I don't even know if I'd go at democracy like that. I mean, you can also go at democracy by saying it's about what life should be about is the most number of choices being dispersed among the individuals. Like, I should be able to make all my choices. Why distill all that into one vote every year or every 2 years or every 4 years? Why should that be? I secede all my power for decisions because I make this one vote. I don't think people voting as a majority for me to not smoke weed or not have a gun or not do anything that I want to do, that's where the real tyranny comes from.
Yeah, voting doesn't bring freedom. I mean, I was looking up voting ages in different countries the other day, and I was blown away by the countries that allow voting. I mean, you can vote in China, you know?
Yeah.
You can vote in Iran and Iraq. It's like, what do you vote for in Iran, Iraq,
everybody
or China?
Everybody plays the voting,
you know?
Game. All dictatorships throughout the 20th century have realized that. Oh, we'll give them the vote, and they'll think that they're have some type of ownership of it, or they're really making the decisions. But all you have to do is rig what their choices are.
Yeah. Even if you're not throwing away ballots, you can still rig it by rigging the choices.
Right, by rigging the choices.
Yeah. It's like, do you want George Bush or do you want the black George Bush?
I mean, either way, you get the wars and you get the Federal Reserve printing money and you get the government making decisions that should be individuals. You get the government taking people's kids away. You get the government throwing people in cages because they don't like the medicines that they prefer.
Yeah.
You get all sorts of ridiculousness.
By the 49-51 thing, what I meant, in case someone doesn't know what that is democracy has been described as, you know, a system in which 51% can tyrannize 49%. Like, if 51% of the people decided that riding bicycles should be punishable by death, it would be the law. Everything Hitler did was legal because Hitler made the laws. And he was elected democratically, you know, legal, real election, right, too.
And, you know, a lot of people, especially sort of this Tea Party-ish movement, say, oh, well, that's why we're a constitutional republic. We're not a democracy. But still, that's not – I mean, that may – for some reason, people think that may make them closer to freedom. But I still don't see how it's freedom to delegate to somebody rights that you don't have. So senators and congressmen can write laws that throw people in cages for smoking a joint or for having a certain amount of drugs. But nobody could ever – I mean, if I went to your house and threw you in a cage because I smelt pot coming out of your laundry room,
which you everybody never, would you realize, never would.
I never
you,
would.
You wouldn't do it, did. And people wouldn't smell it because I don't smoke it. I'm kind of blessed in that my favorite drugs are still legal, caffeine and nicotine. I do so much of them that I shouldn't be allowed to drive a car.
Again, it's that same choice thing. They let you have a few choices. You can get drunk or you can get hyped up on caffeine.
Yeah.
But try to smoke a joint or snort a little coke. Oh, no.
Yeah. But, you know, they're still legal, but they're like, cigarettes are so regulated that they're practically illegal. They're like $11 a pack in New York City now.
Yeah, here in Washington State, they're almost $8 if you add the tax. So, and they tax pipe tobacco here, too. I've never experienced that before. I smoke a little pipe tobacco. So, and in Wyoming, it was never taxed.
Before I moved to Wyoming, my wife and I were planning on moving out of California since pretty much we met. We've been together 6 years, married for almost five. About 6 months into dating, we were like, baby, we should move out of here and move somewhere else. And this is before we had guns. It was kind of funny because I was a Democrat and she was a Republican and I didn't know she was a Republican. And I later told her, I probably wouldn't have married you if I'd known you were a Republican. She said, I know. That's why I didn't tell you. And then I caught up and became a Republican. And then I like passed her up and became a Libertarian. And then she became a Libertarian. And then I become an anarchist or a, you know, anarcho-capitalist. And she's inching towards that too. So we've both helped each other. But we were planning on moving out of California before we bought guns, before we heard of Free State Wyoming or Free State Project New Hampshire. And I did a bunch of research about, mainly based on property costs and low population areas. And what I came up with was a short list of four states that we would consider moving to. And it was Washington State, Wyoming, Kentucky, and West Virginia. And those are actually, interestingly, like the low population states tend to be the ones with better gun laws. So any of those states would have been better than California.
Yeah.
Now for us. Then I discovered Free State Wyoming and went on there, and they'd done a bunch of really detailed actuary work of rating the state, you know, and talking about property taxes for different kinds of freedom, et cetera, et cetera. Basically, like how much you're left alone by the man and society. And
right.
We moved to Wyoming. So you've lived in Wyoming and now you've moved for work to Washington, which was one of my original choices. Talk a little about the difference between the two states.
Night and day, almost. I mean, I know there's a lot of nanny state laws in Wyoming too, but the thing about it is so often you'd rarely come into contact with them. I mean, there weren't a lot of cops on the streets harassing people relative to what I think you could see in a bigger state like Washington State. Also, I think one of the biggest telltale signs is go to the DMV or wherever you get your licenses at and whatever place you're in, and you'll realize just how status a place is. I think me and my wife have been to the DMV here a couple of times, and you're talking 2-3 hour waits. They don't tell you how anything works. They have layers and layers upon laws of hoops you have to jump through to get certain things, and you know, it's almost like they want you to go to the front after waiting 2 hours just to tell you, oh, well, we need document A or document B or document A and B in octuplicate.
That's how California DMVs are. And there's usually a bunch of people about to stab each other because they're so frustrated. But we were blown away by when we moved to Casper and went to get our driver's licenses switched over from California. It was like
no line.
It was like McDonald's, man. We were in and out in like under 15 minutes. And there were probably 10 other people in front of us in line, but they had like five windows open, and the line was chairs. Like, you sat down and you got to move one chair at a time, and everyone was really polite and orderly because they were polite and orderly, not because someone was telling them to be. In California, they have armed guards in the DMV, like menacing people. Yeah, seriously.
With the M16s? With the AR-15s?
No, we're not there yet.
not like New York yet on the streets?
No, with government gun sidearms, probably Glock 22s.
Right,
40
right,
caliber. Oh, that guy that's in our movie, the cop that shot himself in the foot, just lost his lawsuit. I'm really happy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Who did he sue?
Everybody. First, he tried to sue, like, all the TV stations that aired it and lost.
Okay. For those who don't know, let's give him a little background. Okay, this is the guy. He's got the dreadlocks. He's real buff. Goes in, I guess it's a DARE program or whatever, and he pulls out his gun.
He's
he
in
says,
a class full of, like, 10-year-olds or 14-year-olds.
Yeah. He pulls out his gun. I think it was DARE 5th.
He muzzle sweeps the kids. In other words, he points the gun briefly at the kids, holds it up in the air, says it's unloaded, puts it back in his holster, muzzle sweeps the kids again, and then shoots himself in the foot with his so-called unloaded gun.
Yeah,
that guy should be in prison. And but he's like, he sued the DEA because they let him do that, or they let the video get out. My guess is they let the video get out, possibly let the video get out on its own. Because,
well, it sounds like a kid recorded it, right?
Yeah.
It looked like cell phone
video. But the DEA confiscated, or whatever agency he worked for, confiscated the kid's camera and then returned it to the kid. Oh. But
was
you
it
know,
deleted?
The kid uploaded it. I mean, the thing about cops, they're really wary of being that guy. You know, like in the book Moulin Labe, the guy Feathers, the guy who stomps on the bird and gets
the guy with the reputation.
Right. Yeah. Cops are terrified of being the guy with the reputation, of having, of making, you know, like bad cops want to assert their authority and want to scare you into compliance, but they're really, really scared of making a career ending mistake. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, he lost the lawsuit. So that sounds to me like good news.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, even a stop clock is right once a year.
I want to talk
about why drug laws are bad, even if you're a cop. Okay, let's just even talk about weed. We think all drugs should be legal, but it's a lot easier to argue weed than crack or meth. So let's just argue, for the sake of argument, let's just argue weed for a minute. Weed's illegal. Anyone who smoked it knows it didn't ruin their life. They didn't shoot their parents to get more. They were still able to hold a job and go to school. But it's illegal to the point where it ruins your life if you get caught. And anybody who smokes pot knows that the laws are bunk and shouldn't be. And anybody who doesn't smoke it has a friend probably who's been busted. So pretty much the fact that pot's illegal makes the cops and the legal system look ridiculous.
Yes, exactly. You know? A big load of egg on their face. It's great. It's good in that sense. That it brings people to Jesus.
The Jesus of liberty?
The Jesus of liberty, exactly.
Yeah. A libertarian is a liberal who understands economics, or a conservative who's had his ass kicked by the police.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of getting to the point, too, where it's like, you could be Hank Hill, law-abiding, I pay my taxes and put my flag in front of my house and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you're still going to get your ass kicked by the police.
Are you talking about financially, physically, or both?
Possibly all. I was mainly thinking figuratively, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
Oh, totally.
If you're a Vietnam vet and you raise a flag every day and you pay your taxes and you're upset with what's happening to the government, you're going to end up on the DHS watch list.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, I think they all want us on some type of watch list in some sense.
Well, it's kind of weird because it's completely switched left to right in my lifetime. I'm 47, and when I was a kid, when Nixon was president, everybody in Obama's administration would have been on the FBI watch list, and some of them were, you know, literally, like Van Jones was.
Yeah.
But now, if you're, like, the Nixon supporter, you're suspect, or, you know, if you don't think you should vote for Nixon or whoever ran against Nixon. I was 5 years old and don't remember.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the problem with having a system where you have these big secret government agencies in the first place.
Yeah.
I mean, wherever the tides turn, somebody's going to be abusing the power, whether it be from the right, the left, the middle. As long as it's the state exercising power over people, that's where the problem is.
I really think some of them get a boner, literally, from it.
Oh, yeah, you know, yeah.
A lot of what Freud said, and Freud's somewhat been discredited, but some of it's right on, is that, you know, a lot of things come down to sexuality, and maybe Obama's wife told him to bomb Libya. Who knows? Ooh, honey.
It gets her hot.
And he's going against things that he believed when he was a senator, too.
Or that know? He said. He yeah. said it because it was politically expedient yeah. for him at the time.
But it's like, now that he has the keys to the army, he wants to take it for a ride, I think.
Exactly, exactly. It's the absolute power corrupts absolutely. I mean, really, in all honesty, it doesn't seem like he even has the power anymore to rein in the foreign policy. I mean, it really seems like Hillary's running things, at least when it comes to who to bomb.
Who to bomb? Who to bomb?
Who to bomb? Who to bomb? How to bomb them? The biggest thing, too, especially for anybody, and I hope people are realizing this now that there's conservatives and there's this movement to, you know, not spend as much money. I mean, even I think Jon Stewart might have even talked about it. So maybe everybody can now start to realize, you know, every one of those missiles is like $100 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. Per missile.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just insane to think about the amount of money that gets just blown to smithereens.
Yeah.
Why? I mean, that's money they're stealing from us. If people just realize that that's not money that came out of nowhere. I mean, it is money that came out of nowhere, but in the end, it ends up hurting you that they invented it out of nowhere.
Maybe he's doing it as a final his first true attempt at bipartisanship. This is the first time I've seen John McCain agree with anything Obama's done.
That's not true. I mean, they both agreed on TARP. I mean, it just goes back to the problem that there's really no choice. I mean, I think if McCain was president right now, probably would have been at war at Libya maybe slightly sooner.
I should know that, though, about TARP, because I'm watching 4 hours of different news a day. Maybe I need to watch more news a day.
No, you need to watch less TV news a day is what you need to do. I love sometimes watching Fox or CNN. Sometimes you have to. Sometimes they have the boots on the ground in certain places. Yeah, it almost seems like that, huh? But, I mean, especially Fox Business, watching somebody like Napolitano or Stossel. I think when you just watch the thing that's tailored to the masses, instead of going for whatever our niche is or looking for the sources that you agree with, I mean, when you watch something like just the regular Fox, the regular CNN, it seems like a lot of times there's just things thrown in there to throw you off what the real problems are.
Yeah. And I have the same problem in a way with a lot of independent podcasts and stuff of like the ones that seem to tell the most truth also just really commonly tend to veer into insane conspiracy theories. And I'm not going to name any in particular, you know, any podcast or conspiracy theories, but I'll say one. It's like 9/11 truthing or whatever, you know, like the idea that
it's a verb now, 9/11 truthing.
That Bush ordered it. I can't even wrap my head around that because I'm too busy dealing with things that I know to be true, like pot should be legal and taxes should be lower or non-existent. You know, there's so much real stuff that is absolutely positively true for me to just go nuts over.
Right. I mean, even without thinking of that you know, the government might have blew up their own towers.
I can't even look at contrails.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's completely true. It's all how much you really want to think about. But for me, all I need to do to believe the government is evil and out to get me is see what they're doing in real life that's documented. The things they actually even say. I mean, when they threw the guy in jail recently who was making the Liberty coins, the silver coins, threw him in jail saying he was a domestic terrorist. The fact that they say that, I mean, shows that they're out to get us.
Yeah.
That they're out to get me, that they're not on my side. I don't need to see them that they've blown up buildings. The fact that you can't do anything these days. They have a hand in everything.
How can you wake up with a smile every day with that? I want to get back to this. I want to keep positive in every episode of this in some way. You know, at least a puppy parade at the end of Nima saying why things are okay, because I need it, let alone other people needing it.
Well, I mean, we're talking right now. That's how I wake up with a smile. I smile when I wake up and realize I'm going to get to talk about liberty with somebody. I mean, that hasn't happened as much recently, and I've been kind of down and out. So I think that's the biggest thing, is living free, freeing your mind yourself, and then letting others know. I think leading by example, that's where the hope is. I mean, especially if you're a libertarian and agree with the non-aggression principle, you're not going to force people to believe your ideas. People are going to emulate you if they realize that you got it together, and that, hey, maybe he's right. Maybe I don't want people stealing my money all the time and then shooting me.
So it wouldn't work to round people up and put them in libertarian re-education camps at gunpoint?
It completely wouldn't. I mean, that's like an oxymoron. I mean, and that's the problem, is that's almost human nature, to be tempted to force feed your ideas down somebody else's throat. But that's what everybody does. That's how politics works. And I almost feel like in the past, you know, thousands of years ago, people would use religion or different types of ways to rile the people up. And it seems like now it's this idea that government can fix everybody's problems, or that a government should even exist. It's all just in our heads. Yep. It's just a mythology they use to control us. They know what they're doing. I mean, nobody in their right mind at any upper level really believes any of the lip service liberty things they pay lip service to. I mean,
you mean the statists who say government
worship?
The statists
and the people in power. I mean, honestly, the Department of Defense, do they really think they're defending the borders of the nation? I mean, they're the Department of War.
One really sick thing I've heard is, you know who Cass Sunstein is, right?
Ugh, yes, I do, unfortunately.
For those that don't know, he's an Obama-appointed, non-elected guy who's kind of helping run the country in a really major way. He's the something czar. What is he? He's the nanny czar.
It's all the same, isn't it?
Yeah, but he wrote a book called Nudge, The Power of Nudge, which I call Nudge, which is the Yiddish term for someone who hassles people and pokes them in a way they don't want. He wrote this book called Nudge, and his idea is nudging people into what he considers good behavior. Like, for instance, don't outlaw
upping taxes on cigarettes.
Don't outlaw cigarettes. Just add $4 more tax on them. Yeah. Don't outlaw meat. Just make it harder to get, more expensive, and say bad things about it. I found this out recently. He calls that theory libertarian paternalism. That's total like 1984.
Again, corruption
speak,
of language.
Man. Yeah. Yep. Libertarian paternalism.
I did not know he called it that. That is insane.
Yeah. Well, you know the boiling frog theory, right?
Right.
It's the boiling frog theory is the idea that if you throw a frog into a boiling pot of water, he's going to notice and
die. He's going to jump out.
Or jump out. But if you put a frog into cold water and then slowly turn up the heat, he'll sit in there because he'll just think it's warm and won't notice that it's getting to a lethal temperature. And that's kind of what government does. Like, they won't outlaw guns overnight because they know there'd be blood in the street. They'll just tax ammo, increase regulation, make it harder to own one, make a certain one illegal without making them all illegal, to the point where a lot of people may just say, this is too much bother. But that's not going to happen. People aren't going to give up their guns.
No, I don't think people would ever give up their guns in this country. I really hope not. I mean,
I don't know. Real 3% of the citizens fought the American Revolution. Maybe 10% more gave them support or food or comfort or a place to sleep.
Yeah.
And there's an organization called the 3%ers now. And I know that even talking about this gets you on a government list. So let's talk about it. The 3%ers are what they consider the 3% of American riflemen who will not give up their arms, and it won't end well when they try to take them away. But there's actually a much larger group that would be a real wild card, as Boston said, was the concealed carry permit holders. When you carry a gun and those are people, most of them, don't own a rifle, aren't interested in politics that much other than voting for Republicans and keep sending money to the NRA.
Yeah.
They're not revolutionary, but when they are finally told you can't carry a gun anymore without being a criminal, they're going to have a really big decision to make. And a lot of those people, I mean, you bond with a gun. You've been carrying a gun for almost a year now. You've bonded with it, right?
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Yeah. I love it. I don't leave home without it. It's like my wallet, my keys, my gun.
Your gun. You got to keep your gat intact.
And I'd rather have my gat with me than my wallet or my phone if I had to pick one.
True that. I don't know. The phone's pretty useful. I'd rather have them all, I guess.
Well, you can, because it's a free
country. Because I have the gun. Yeah.
Because you can.
the NEMA News with Nima Vedati.
And now for your daily dose of nanny statism in our daily segment, Tyranny Today.
Tyranny Today.
So for Tyranny Today, I'm finding it really ironic that Obama wants to use our money to arm rebels in Libya while Obama wants to take guns away from peaceful, nonviolent people.
Right,
in America.
Right. So he takes our guns, or he takes our money, wants to take our guns, and wants to give guns to people who are fighting against a corrupt government in their own country. And to me, the biggest horribleness of the whole thing is they're just jumping into sides in a civil war like they always do. It's going to make things so much worse. But I don't know. Maybe that's the point. Maybe they just want a long, prolonged war, because war is good for the state. It's good for the government. Yeah. It's not good for business. It's good for the evil businesses that are, good for Boeing.
I mean, even from a statist Republican historical sense, it's a bad idea, because that's pretty much what created the Taliban, was Reagan arming the rebels in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
There's probably a lot of good people in that group that they're arming, but there's probably a lot of people who aren't. What are they going to do, like interview them all? Are you a bad person? Will you ever use these guns against us? No? Okay, here's your gun.
Not only that, but I mean, the whole point is it's got to be way too complex for anybody in America to even really understand who these people are. We jump into these situations like we are their parents, like we know who they are, like they're our kids. Now, Johnny, you just have to do this. But we're just killing people and giving people weapons. It's almost just for the sake of doing it. It's not gonna help the situation any.
It also leads to what's called the mongoose problem, which is how on some islands where they had a rat problem,
they get
problem,
the snakes for the rats, and then they have to get the mongooses for the snakes, and then what do you do with all the mongooses?
Yeah. Which is also an analogy for police, you know? I mean, they're supposed to fight criminals, and they end up being more criminals sometimes than the criminals.
Right, right.
They really do. I mean, I'm more afraid of Obama than I am of Osama.
Me too, yeah. He actually has control over my life. He can actually take my freedom away. I can't honestly remember
like
when Osama bin Laden
took
my freedom away. I mean, he's obviously an evil guy, like one of the most evil people ever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I still see the same thing with our government. They're the ones really taking my freedom away. In the end, they're supposedly who society thinks is allowed to tell me what my freedoms are. Shouldn't I be allowed to choose what I do? Why is that not my area of expertise? Because it is. I'm a doctor of NEMA. They haven't even gone to kindergarten on NEMA. And they're going to tell me how to run it.
Well, speaking of kindergarten, too, it's like I think a smart seventh grader knows more about economics, at least, than the people running the country.
I get confused on that too, because I wonder if they really know what they're doing. Do they know that their silly Keynesian models are going to fall apart? Do they know that they can't predict things?
I mean, there's two theories with that. Like, there's two theories with the truther movement. The government made 9/11 happen, or the government let 9/11 happen. I see two theories with the insanity of how the country's run. Getting away from the idea that nothing should be run anyway, let's pretend for a minute that small government is a good idea. The way that it's run is insane. A seventh grader knows better. A seventh grader gets his allowance. He can't spend more than that.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. And he knows it's not infinite. He knows he sees, a giant pow power wheels, and his parents maybe aren't doing too hot. He knows that. He can sense that, and he won't try to get $400 from his parents. Our government sees something or thinks of something it wants to do, and its first instinct is to spend the money on it.
He also can't print money.
He also can't print money.
He could photocopy some bills on his computer and hand them to his dad, but his dad wouldn't accept them.
And he doesn't have a bunch of guns to say, "Dad, you must accept this."
Right, yeah.
It seems like that's going to be how the system falls apart, is we're going to need to use more and more convincing to get people to take our money and buy our bonds and trust us economically. I mean, I don't know. There's got to be a point down the line somewhere where not even all our naked aggression and throwing our muscles around are going to convince people that we're trustworthy when it comes to not being billions of dollars in debt to them and never paying it back.
Interesting planet you've got here, Nima.
I've got here? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, do you ever think about it in that scope, like everything that's going on right now in the grand scheme of the world? I mean, I've heard it like if the life of the world were a 24-hour clock, man has been here for 30 seconds.
Right, right.
And America's been here for half a second. That can make it better or worse, thinking about it that way. But it kind of makes it better for me.
Why? That things can... there's a long enough timeline, so even if you don't see the world as you want to see it, you have hope that maybe it got better in the long run.
No, it's much more pessimistic than that. It's more like we're just all friggin' insect.
Right, insects. The sun's going to eat the earth eventually anyway, so what's the point?
We're just ticks on Mother Earth's back.
I kind of feel that way, I mean, especially when people are talking about plastic these days. I mean, not to hate on environmentalists. I think the environment should be something that's kept pretty, but the idea that we're honestly going to kill the planet with plastic. The planet is way bigger in scope than us. I mean, it's just the planet doesn't need us to survive.
I think part of why it's easier for me to be pessimistic in a way, it's a defense mechanism, and it's kind of like a happy, jokey pessimism. Like, we're just ants. But part of it, too, is like I don't believe in reincarnation, and I don't have any kids. I don't know if you believe in reincarnation, but I know you plan to have kids. So you have a bit more invested in the future than I do. I just want to stay out of the camps until I die of old age in 50 years or something.
You want to stay out of the camps? That's your main concern?
Yes. I want to stay out of the camps and, you know, keep up my style to which I've become accustomed.
I don't know. I don't know if the camps will ever really happen. I mean, I have no doubt that somebody along the line somewhere has thought of it, or maybe they even exist, and there's probably plans drawn up somewhere for some reason. I know governments always do things like that and have contingency plans, but...
They have all kinds of weird contingency plans. I remember I heard that in the 60s, the Army Corps of Engineers had a plan to make the San Francisco Bay a landfill.
If only.
To increase the amount of housing there. The thing is with high-end science is just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. Right. Well, some would argue that the camps exist already.
Yeah, I know. Some do argue that,
In the form of you know, jails and arrest for
That's true.
Things.
I mean, we have the highest per capita prison population here in America. It is completely ridiculous that we have a drug war. I mean, that's almost a concentration camp system for certain people. It's a concentration camp system for people who buy and sell drugs. And that's, it is drug users, but why should they be in a concentration camp? And it's also just people who see an economic opportunity and take it.
I mean, even if you look at drug users as sick, which I don't. Well, some. I mean, people can use hard drugs until it destroys them, but, you know.
Do you throw somebody with the flu in jail?
Do you throw someone with cancer in jail? Yeah. You know? No, you let them get treatment, or if you want to take a status attitude, you give them treatment like they do in Amsterdam.
Right. But I mean, exactly. It shouldn't be a socialized responsibility. It's an individual thing. And the thing is, people say it hurts society, but I really think the biggest hurt to society is having a drug war. It's having a war on part of the society. That's what hurts society.
So, Nima, you're planning to have kids someday, right?
Totally planning on having kids. Yeah, definitely.
You must be pretty hopeful about the world to want to do that.
I'm hopeful enough. I'm hopeful enough to give it the old college try, as they say.
The old post-college try.
I mean, really, I don't think living in despair is the way to be, no matter what, no matter how bad the world looks. I mean, the concentration camp survivors were the ones that still had hope. It's all about attitude, and I think that if I try my best, that's the most important thing. And be prepared.
I'm going to try to homeschool my kids.
That's the idea.
Someone was criticizing our movie the other day. This liberal chick I know. Liberal chick. Yeah, that's PC. Who liked stuff I've done before and liked the movie. But her biggest problem with it was that we compared public schooling to rape. She had a problem with that. Now, here's my thought on that. When I was a kid... When I was 7, I was molested by a 15-year-old boy. I'm over it for the most part. You know, it was bad, but I would consider it rape because, you know, 7-year-old doesn't have the ability to really consent to anything like that. And I felt really weird about doing it, and he talked me into it and kind of aggressed me into it. He didn't threaten to kill me or anything, but, you know, I didn't feel a way I could say no. Happened once. I think that 13 years of public schooling did more damage to me than that one rape. I don't think it's exaggerating. Actually, the last 4 years of school I went to was private school. but it really was public school in a way. It was a private school, but it was run exactly like a public school. The teachers were a little better. The classes were a little smaller, but it was still love the state, love your country, love God. It was public school with love God mixed in. You know, so I had 13 years of basically public school, and then I was forced. It was also, I couldn't not go to those 4 years of school. I had to go to some school. You know, so it really, I say I went to 13 years of public school, even though 4 years it was private school. And it definitely did more damage to me than that one rape. And that one rape was pretty bad and really messed me up and, like, required therapy later. But 13 years of public school did worse. So I don't think that that's a crazy comparison.
I don't think it is either. And I think that society is ageist in general. If you really think about it, you're not really a full human being until you're 21 in this country by law. I can imagine teenagers being able to do lots of things. And I think it's ridiculous that we're supposed to be complete wards of the state until we're a certain age.
Well, I like the Claire Wolf thing of if you move out of your house and support yourself, you're an adult.
Exactly. And adult. Exactly. Not something arbitrary age.
How can you go fight in a war at 18 and not be able to drink?
Right. Not be able to do a lot of things.
But wait, we got away from the optimism. Get back to the optimism.
We have to get back to the optimism.
That's why I want this podcast to be different in that I want to put a puppy parade in each one, but not a fake one, a real one. What's the solution? We talked about the problem.
Talk about the solution? The solution is to withdraw your consent. Think about it. Think about everything that's going on. The world is not what they say it is on Fox or CNN. It's not about left and right. It's about the state versus you. You have to first realize that, and then you have to realize that it's about being free yourself. If you make that declaration that you're free and you really feel it and you start to read the right things, you start to educate yourself on the fact that government is the problem, not the solution. That's the main thing, because it's all in the end, it's about individuals being free. And so just keep yourself free, have your own guns, have your own food, have your own way of income. Be self-confident, realize that you don't need somebody to use the force of the state to make the world look like you want to make it look. You can do it yourself.
I like that.
Awesome.
Yep. Say goodbye. Goodbye, people.
Thank you for joining us. Peace.
Thank you for joining us. Tell two friends and subscribe and comment and ask questions on the website at gunsandweed.com, and we will answer and address them the following week.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I owe me and that include endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every Friday night, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.